Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and get cozy because you are listening to Mindful as a Mother with Paige Bruce and Lindsay Adams. Hey, Lindsay here. The thing that gives me the most anxiety about raising my son is the fear that the world will try to force him to conform and become someone who is neurotypical passing. That's why in our home, we do everything we can to support him in just being his best self. If he needs to stim, you got it, buddy. If he's having a sensory meltdown, let's cocoon and cancel our plans. Being his best self means trusting himself in a world that will tell him being himself is wrong. And that freaking breaks my heart for him. That fear used to paralyze me, but now it just empowers me to fight harder to change how we view and approach neurodiversity as parents. If I can give him a strong enough foundation of self-worth, he will be resilient and brave enough to be himself. That's what I wish for my child, your child, and every child on this earth, regardless of their neurotype. And that's why we created Responsive Parenting Your Neurodivergent Child, the video series. In this series, we break down how to determine your child's unique needs and how to parent them from a responsive approach rather than an approach that's focused on behavior and punishments. Because instead of trying to fit these kids into the world, we need to make their world work for them. And this course will show you how to do it. It's $20. Check out the link in our show notes.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for therapy or the therapeutic relationship. And the information given in this podcast is purely for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the advice of a professional. Okay, now say something.
Rusty, crusty, dusty. Hello, and welcome back to Mindful as a Mother. We are entering season 4, and this is Paige.
And my name is Lindsay.
And this season, we're talking all about what?
What are we talking about? My mind just went blank. You like put me on the spot. We are talking about lots of different things, but especially neurodivergent parenting, parenting neurodivergent children, creating a neuroaffirming home environment for our kids.
Yeah. And some of the things that we're really excited about is inviting neurodivergent voices on the podcast. So autistic individuals, people that experience ADHD, whether themselves or their parenting, children with these diagnoses, we want to help break down the stigma of what it's like to live in a neurodivergent brain.
Yes, and I feel like hearing lived experience from people who live with autism and ADHD, and they are probably people that you could meet in the grocery store and you would have no idea, really helps break down the stigma of neurodivergent and these neurodivergence and these specific, like, if you want to call them, diagnoses.
Yes. And we had a couple of doctors, intellectual doctors, they're actually neuropsychs, on for an interview, which you guys will get later in this season, but they said something along the lines of neurodiversity is to humankind like biodiversity is to the
ecosystem.
Exactly. That's the word I always forget.
She asked these people like 6 times, guys, to say this, like, quote. Please. And then at the end, she's like, excuse me, I didn't get the last word.
The very last word is the one that keeps escaping my executive function.
It's ecosystem.
I love it. But with that, we get a lot of comments when we are trying to educate people about neurodivergence, that using the term neurodivergent is an umbrella term and it's a soft term or like a blanket term, and now we're just saying everyone is neurodivergent. And in reality, neurodiversity exists in humankind, period. Whether you have specifically had a diagnosis, you're self-diagnosing, you just identify with one or two examples of the things we're discussing, I think it's important to understand that one brain is not identical to another brain.
Yeah, and that's the perspective we really take, and we do use more umbrella terms in our content, and we will talk about specific things, but the umbrella terms really help us find people that resonate with our content, and it's not that we're afraid to say the words autism and ADHD. We've also gotten that, yeah. And like, I know that that's a piece for some people who struggle with like accepting that maybe their child's autistic or that they're autistic, but it, and the language is so weird, and I mean weird in like a sticky way, everyone has a certain way that they want their experience to be referred to. And I 100% feel like that should be respected. But also when I'm making a piece of content or creating a podcast for a variety of people, the information still applies, even if we don't use the language or terminology that you prefer for yourself. And we'll talk a lot about that this season, about talking to your kids about their diagnosis, if they have one, if you want to call it that, talking about the language that we use. And so I just want everybody to know it is never our intention to like make anyone feel like disrespected, but also understand that like we're not going to word police, because I think in a lot of communities, especially the Facebook ones, Facebook's unhinged, you guys.
Truly.
Moms will go in there looking for help and they will say, my son has autism, or my son is on the spectrum, or, and they will get torn a freaking part. And it's like, guys, this parent's just looking for help. Like, we don't need to like language police everything everybody says.
Exactly. So with that, these first couple episodes of the podcast, we're going to be talking specifically about the stress cycle. And the book that we're referencing for today is called Burnout, The Secret to Unlocking the Stress Cycle, specifically just part one. It's divided into three parts. So to understand the stress cycle, which the stress cycle is also what we call fight or flight. It's also what we call anxiety. It's what we call like a panic response. These are all things that are synonymous.
Lizard brain?
The lizard brain. Yeah. Yes. They're all synonymous. We're talking about the stress cycle, period.
Yeah.
And everyone experiences the stress cycle. It's a human experience. So you need to understand what burnout is. Burnout, specifically, scientifically, and this book was written, I'm in the middle of my sentence. This book was written by Emily Nagoski and Amelia Nagoski. They're sisters that both have either a PhD or an MD. And they break down the science of what this is. So this whole book is research backed and based, and it also has a very strong feministic twist. So if you're into that, please
read it. Yeah, it is like our speed, 100%. And I seriously think every woman needs to read this, because there's a lot of stuff in there that is so good, but especially every mother.
Yes, absolutely. And so burnout, as defined by science, has three components. One is the emotional exhaustion. So that's the fatigue that comes from caring too much for too long. Two, depersonalization. And I think this one really gets thrown around a lot right now too, just like at least on TikTok when we're talking through mental health. But this specifically defined, depersonalization is the depletion of empathy, caring, and compassion. It is very much a, no matter what I do, nothing's going to change. Nothing will impact them mindset. Mm-hmm. And three, decreased sense of accomplishment. So an unconquerable sense of futility. Basically, like nothing that you do makes any difference. Like you'll never accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. You won't move forward. So this happens in the helping professions. And something that I've passionately talked about since Lindsay and I first met is actually parental burnout.
Yes.
And we specifically did a podcast around parental burnout, and I've taught classes separately on parental burnout. And right now there isn't a lot of research out on parental burnout itself, but they are actively researching it. It just hasn't been published yet, because along with the helping professions like nurses, doctors, therapists, like teachers is a big one. Parenting falls within the helping profession, more or less.
Well, yeah. And your caregiving. So like we talk about, you know, if you're caring for a disabled or like older person, they talk about burnout a lot and like caregiving. And that's essentially what parenting is like taking care of someone, meeting their needs 24/7.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to know, Lindsay, is there a time when you felt burnt out?
Yes, there's a couple times in my life. The big one is when I like started breaking out in hives all over my body.
That's a good example.
I know. And I was, it like, this was probably right before I started Mindful as a Mother. This is when I really like started to learn about the nervous system and stress responses in myself and polyvagal theory and all the things. But yeah, my body would have a stress response of breaking out in hives. Nothing could make it go away. I couldn't like take ibuprofen or it would get worse. And I went to the doctor and they were just like, oh, for some people this goes away in like 6 months. For some people it never goes away. And I was like, oh, great. This sounds awesome. Yeah. I was like not down with that. So I went to Dr. Google and started like researching. And that's how I found out about burnout and stress cycle.
Yeah, which is funny because at that point, weren't you already a clinician? Like, weren't you already a counselor? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this isn't something I would say is just like layman knowledge. Like, this isn't just something that average people just get to know about.
Yeah, they don't teach. It's not taught about. And it definitely should be.
Absolutely. Because all humans experience this. So we're going to talk specifically about women. And there's this, the idea of the stress cycle is the idea that we encounter stress, we have a response, and then there has been ways throughout evolution that we have signaled to our body that the stressor is neutralized. Mm-hmm. And like we don't have to feel like there's a threat anymore. And then we close the stress cycle, like it ends. Mm-hmm. Ta-da! So something that I talk about a lot, and I know I've mentioned on this podcast before, is that emotions basically go through tunnels in our body. If you think about it like a train through a tunnel. And so sometimes we're able to experience emotion, it goes through the tunnel, and then it exits the tunnel. And other times we feel exhaustion and burnout when we're experiencing these emotions, like the train going through the tunnel, and then it just stops. It's stuck. It gets stuck in your body and it continues to build, because until you can end the stress cycle, until you can release the emotion, it just continues to build in your body, which is why we end up having these big mm-hmm. like responses, these big like physiological chronic illness responses.
And this is people who stuff their emotions. Like that was very much me. Like I have been so sensitive my whole life that I would just like shove it down.
Because that's what you were taught to do, right?
And then it will. It all has to come out.
Eventually, right? Yeah,
the tunnel gets clogged, my friends.
So we talk about exhaustion happens right before actual burnout. Mm-hmm. And exhaustion can happen when we get stuck in an emotion, right? It doesn't go through the tunnel. And I appreciated that they talked about different ways that we could get stuck. And it could just be we're experiencing something really intense, but also it's because we are being constantly exposed to situations that activate that emotion. One of those being human giver syndrome. Did you remember reading about this in the book?
Yes. And I think that's why I said that all females need to read this.
Yes. So human giver syndrome summed up is, well, first, I'm going to read the description of it, Lindsay, and I want you to tell me like the image of what comes to your brain. So like all of our listeners, close your eyes, listen to the definition of a human giver, and then I just want you to identify what comes to your mind, what type of person. So human givers must at all times be pretty, happy, calm, generous, and attentive to the needs of others, which means they must never be ugly, angry, upset, ambitious, or attentive to their own needs. Givers are not supposed to need anything, and if they ask for something or demand something, that's a violation of their role as a giver, and they must be punished. And if a giver doesn't obediently and sweetly hand over whatever is being wanted, they must also be punished, shamed, or destroyed for that.
I thought of a mom.
Honestly, mm-hmm. I was like, how true? Mm-hmm. Because it almost doesn't matter what you're experiencing in motherhood. Like if you voice that you're tired, if you voice that you're frustrated, if you voice that you don't necessarily like your kids today, that you can't do it all, you're shamed for it. Mm-hmm. If you go to work, you're shamed for it. If you stay home, you're shamed for it. Mm-hmm. It's like the expectation that you're always meant to be on and available, even to the detriment of your own experience.
And if motherhood is hard in any way, like you can't hack it and you're shamed for it.
Yeah. Like you were made for this.
Yeah.
And you can't do it. Like what a failure. I also shared this post today to our stories, actually, where somebody posted a reel talking about how we should be celebrating how women choose to spend their life, whether it's having kids or not having kids. Mm-hmm. And I 110,000% agree with that. And then they shared some of the comments they got on that, because again, the internet is wild. Mm-hmm. And one of them was from other women talking about, if you didn't have children, then you don't have a purpose in life. Like you, you might as well not be contributing at all.
Oh my god!
I know, I was surprised. And then the other one that I was like, this is definitely a Chad. We talked about how as women age, their market value decreases. I know. Gross. And as men age, their market value increases.
No, it doesn't.
I was like, gross. I hate that. So what do you think are some ways that parents of neurodivergent children experience burnout, as we've defined it?
I think there's a lot of demands in parenting neurodivergent children. Well, parenting in general, but specifically with neurodivergent children, in having to be attentive and on and co-regulating more maybe than other people.
Mm-hmm.
And also the demand of having to keep up with like adjusting parenting styles, noticing what's going on with your child, sensory environments, just all of the things you need to be managing.
Mm-hmm.
Can create a level of burnout. And also when your child is going through a harder time or struggling with something that requires more energy and presence on your part, which you may not always have to give.
Yeah, exactly. Some things came to my mind, like when we hear about parents that have gone to doctor after doctor and experienced no support,
mm-hmm.
right? To me, that's like, man, you've overcome to all these barriers through all these hoops to maybe like get pre-approval from your insurance, find someone that works with your insurance, got an appointment, you've waited, and then you get seen and they're like, nope, everything's perfectly fine. They just need to stop eating noodles. And you're like, that's not going to help me. Or
nothing pisses me off more than that.
Honestly, or invalidating your experience. Mm-hmm. So, right, like the snippet that they see in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're not taking any feedback from the parent. And it's like, no, they make eye contact. Like, they respond immediately to the things that I'm asking. They've been able to follow directions since they've been in my office for this 10-minute meeting. So they're definitely nothing. No neurodivergence here at all detected. So, like, invalidating that parent's experience.
Mm-hmm.
Shaming parenting advice or being given unwanted advice.
Oh, yes. Like, always chiming in
mm-hmm.
with – and this happens with, like, extended family members, mm-hmm. too, or in public settings.
Yes. That was something that came to mind because we're trying to manage our children's behaviors, but then the feedback – either from society or from our extended family, who's telling us that we're doing it all wrong and they just need to be beat. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that from even people, adults that didn't have children, that were our friends at the time, saying that our children just needed to be hit and that's why they jumped around before bed and weren't listening. And I was like, we're no longer friends. Done.
And yep.
Scene. So another one, not being able to find the resources to parent your specific child.
Yes. And I think that that specifically with neurodivergence is really hard because everybody is so different. And so it's hard to find maybe advice or parenting skills that you feel like resonate with you and your family and how you want to parent that works for your child.
Yes. And so I called Lindsay today, actually, because I think there's a level of burnout when you're parenting neurodivergent children. And then there's a level of exhaustion or burnout when you're neurodivergent parenting mm-hmm. neurodivergent children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called her this morning as soon as I was able to escape the house for podcast weekend. And we're later than we had planned. And we both are late. And I was like, yeah, it was a total mess this morning. And I was so dysregulated and anxious and overwhelmed myself because I had to like stay calm and patient and focused to help each of my three children through their own individual experiences this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot. Like one of them was like scream crying about something. Another one was having like a rage tantrum about something else. Like they're experiencing this variety of intense emotions and trying to like hold that space to help them regulate was really difficult.
It is really difficult. And a lot of times, especially if you have multiple children, you don't usually get that downtime in between to regulate and then be on to the next. So it's just like one after the other after the other.
Mm-hmm. Which is honestly what it felt like this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is an example of me within this stress cycle. Like because I'm triggered because my child is triggered. And so I'm trying to figure out how to manage myself while also supporting them. And in the book, we talk a lot about they talk about Emily and Amelia, like we're besties. We are talking, but they talk about how managing the stressor and managing the stress are two different things.
Yeah, and I think it's a concept that not a lot of people understand. So once your child is done and regulated, if you are still not regulated, you still have to do something to regulate.
Yes. So even after I walked out of the house, I was soaking with stress juice. Yeah. Is what they call it. Lindsay just made the most disgusting face.
Because my mind just goes straight to the gutter. And I'm like, really? There was not a better way to write that.
That stress juice. Is just dripping.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to describe the stress cycle now. So evolutionary times, let's say the threat was a tiger or some kind of large animal. I think we use this a lot just in the field of like, okay, a tiger is chasing you. You're going to do one of three things, fight, flight, or freeze. And so in order for your body to respond to keep you safe, you have developed a stress cycle, a stress response. That means your body is going, your brain is going to detect danger and it's going to act without you actively making that decision. And that could be fight, flight, or freeze. So you have all these chemical cocktails running through your body, or stress juice running through your body until you can escape it. So then we're talking like you're running, 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 and then you get into your village and a bunch of people come and it's like 15 against this one tiny lion, and then you kill it, and then everybody jumps around and celebrates, and then you eat it, like roast it and eat it, and then you bury all the parts you weren't able to eat and done. Like the threat has been neutralized, and then you signal to your body that the threat had ended by the celebration, the feast, the burying of the extras. And in modern day, we don't have that opportunity with stressors. It's like my kids are popping off and I'm trying to stay regulated. I'm soaking with the stress juice. I'm in fight or flight. Like once my kids are calm, that doesn't necessarily, like my body is not familiar with that as a trigger to say that the stressor has been neutralized. So I have to come up with ways to remind my body that like this is over now and we can move on. We can close the stress cycle and we can move forward in our day. So what are some modern day stressors that leave us soaked with stress juice?
So I think one of the biggest ones is the constant like technology and communication, because we're always checking our phones, checking our emails, checking our social media, on top of trying to like do things in our day-to-day life. Parenting is one of the biggest for me. Back-to-back demands of parenting. Finances is a stressor, I think, for a lot of people right now. I'm trying to think of other ones. Can you think of any?
Yeah, those are really good ones. I was thinking of being busy.
Yeah, like
hustle culture.
Yeah, hustle culture.
Leaves us. And this is true whether you're a parent or not. Hustle culture leaves you soaked in stress juice.
Because it's like you never get a minute to breathe in between things. It's like, oh, on to the next.
Yeah.
On to the next.
And you're only successful if you are pushing yourself to that degree, you know, and you're encountering the same thing every single day. It's not like, oh, we killed a lion, now there's no lion there. It's like, cool, I pushed really hard at work today and I'm feeling super stressed. You go to sleep, you wake up, and you do it again tomorrow. Like you are constantly being faced with that same thing. And I really felt that. I had shared with Lindsay over Christmas break. I took a week off and I intentionally had unstructured time. Like no plans, no schedules, no like to-dos for the children or myself. And if I felt tired, I let myself just rest. And that is sleeping, but also just sitting in my recliner with a cup of coffee until I felt re-energized. And then the week I went back to work, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I feel stressed. I didn't realize I hadn't been feeling stressed until.
And sometimes that's how it works. Like you don't realize. And that's why this is so like groundbreaking, life changing. Because most people, we're very disconnected from our bodies and our bodies like internal responses. So when you get a break from that or when you start working on these things, you'll be like, oh, wow, I didn't realize how activated or in low level fight or flight I was all the time, pretty much
existing constantly.
Yeah, I
liken it to needing to feel busy, like the go go go, always need to be go go going. And I think too, like you said, our devices, we're so connected to our devices that have very like short videos, TikToks, Reels, right? Those 10 to 15 second attention grabbers, or those notifications, or those text messages, or, and we get trapped in that. And so I thought about that too as a modern day stressor. Mm-hmm. And then also the overconsumption of other people's lives.
Yeah.
Leading to comparisons, mm-hmm. and letting that be a stressor.
Mm-hmm. Because then it creates this, I'm always comparing myself. And I think that's part of why we're maybe so disconnected from ourselves, is because mm-hmm. we're always like looking for entertainment or like stimuli like outside of ourselves. It's all, mm-hmm. we're always looking at someone else's life. We're always looking at, you know, someone's stories. And I love Instagram as much as the next person, but it, I think it does create this like lack of internal awareness.
Mm-hmm. And it leaves us without the ability to close the stress cycle. Yeah. Because we just keep consuming it.
Yeah.
Right. That's the nature of how they designed these apps and devices, though. So I'm not saying that that's a human fault. Like, you listening are making this mistake and you're doing all these things, and shame on you. It's, this is how they were designed. Mm-hmm. Like, this is their purpose. Mm-hmm. And so it's really knowing and being able to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought about how if I was just working, I wouldn't feel as stressed. But the idea that I'm working and also managing the house, and then also trying to show up as mom for my kids, whether that's like carpooling to their activities or helping them tend to their basic needs of like food and hygiene or homework. It's like, if I wasn't doing all of that, which society is really demanding of me right now, mm-hmm. then I don't think I would be as like juicy.
Oh yeah, I agree. Because I had the same experience over Christmas break, and I only worked like a couple days, but things were just very low key. And I think we had been on our podcast break. So we came back on Monday and we were like talking about the podcast, and we were like, oh shit, we have a podcast. We've got to like, I have tasks every week that I have to do for that, that I haven't done in months. And it all felt so stressful and so overwhelming. I'm fine now. But I think it is that lack of like, oh, I didn't realize how busy I was, or how I was constantly in this, like, I need to check off all of these to-dos.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I was thinking is this level of parental shame, because something physically happening to us creates a stress response or puts us in fight or flight, but also something emotionally. Mm-hmm. And our perceptions of what's happening to us emotionally sets us into fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So mm-hmm. the idea that we're being shamed or judged.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think one really good example would be that my oldest was at school the first week back from Christmas break, and her teacher messaged me and asked that I pack her more food because she's saying that she's so hungry and eating the school snacks, and she finishes her whole lunch by snack time. And she's told the teacher that she wasn't eating breakfast every morning because she didn't have time, because she was too rushed, which I was like,
I love kids, dude.
I was like, that's fake news. Right. So I think a past version of myself, and I think even the present version really struggled with this. The past version of myself would have been all consumed by the potential judgment I felt from that teacher.
Like, they think I don't feed my child.
Yeah. Or like, I'm rushing her in the morning before school. Yeah. So she's not eating.
Yeah.
And so the teacher provided suggestions like, maybe you can wake her up earlier. And this was before we had a dialogue. Wake her up earlier, or really hold her hand and help her eat, which I also, like, with my neurodivergent child, like, I don't hold her hands. I do teach her skills and routines.
Yeah.
And so the real story is that she has an iPod. It's an iPhone, but doesn't have any service. Yeah. And she has 30 minutes on it every day. And she was waking up and trying to do that. And she gets woken up an hour and a half before they need to be at school. And so she was waking up and spending 30 minutes doing that, and then dragging in the rest of her morning routine.
Yeah.
And then not eating and not packing the extra snacks that we have asked her to pack, and just taking her lunch instead of her bag with like all the snacks. So while, yes, she felt rushed and didn't have an opportunity to eat breakfast because there's just not enough time, there was also a lot happening in the background. But I do think that the idea that the teachers working with our children are judging us,
mm-hmm.
or thinking we're not doing good, or, you know, those types of things, I think create those emotional responses in the stress cycle.
Yeah, I remember a time where I would go into fight or flight every time the school would call me with Sam. And it's not, and I think especially if you have a neurodivergent child that goes through struggles at school, there's going to be behavioral stuff. There's mm-hmm. going to be things that are harder. And I just had to be like, okay, it's not that. I mean, the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. And I had to learn how to like take care of my own emotions through that. Yeah.
And so our bodies, like I said, are used to an evolutionary way of signaling the stress cycle has ended and it's safe to proceed. And I think a lot of the modern day stressors don't support or allow for that anymore. And we have to really figure out how to communicate to our bodies mm-hmm. that the stress cycle has ended. Mm-hmm. And so before we end this first part, because this next episode will go into a whole bunch more, I just want to mention a few reasons why sometimes we get stuck in the stress cycle, or why the tunnel or the train is stuck in the tunnel, whatever metaphor you want to use. We love a metaphor. So the first one is chronic stress. Mm-hmm. So it is encountering the stressor consistently. Whether that's your work stuff, whether that's your children's big emotions, whether that's incidents at school, feeling consistently judged in your like inner circle, encountering those repetitively and consistently, chronic stress, we get stuck. Two, social appropriateness.
Yeah, I love this one. Because it's like, okay, so we're meant to feel our feelings as humans. So mm-hmm. if you say something to me that hurts my feelings and activates me, and I'm in a meeting or I'm, I don't know, in public and I'm trying not to cry. Crying is my body's natural way of moving through those emotions. Mm-hmm. And crying is one of the ways that like signals like the threat is gone, the stress response is over. But if you have to, or you do choose to shove that down, or maybe you're angry because something happens in a meeting mm-hmm. or with your child and you have to shove that down for social appropriateness, then it gets stuck there because you have to go back and process it later, essentially, or move yeah. through it later.
And figure it out,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's like some kid making, okay, so this really happened. One time, this little kid, which I understand they're a little kid, told my daughter that she was fat because she has like round cheeks and she's not at all fat. Yeah. And I don't, like body shaming is not a thing. We don't talk like that in my home. So I was activated, but it's not socially appropriate for me to curse out
the mom,
a 7-year-old,
yeah,
or yeah. the mom, right? Like, yeah. So that's an example of social appropriateness. Like, it's not socially appropriate to hit people, to curse them out in public settings. Like, you know, it's another really good example is road rage. Mm-hmm. It is not socially appropriate to chase somebody down in a car and try to hit them with your car because there's they cut you off. That. I'm sure there is. But, like, that's a real-life example.
Russell Crowe's in it for anyone that's
listening. So the third one that I think is really important is that it's safer.
Yeah.
It's safer to not deal with it, right? Like, it's safer for me to ignore that person riding me in the car, like, on my bumper trying to chase me down. It's safer for me not to respond or react. But like I'm in the stress cycle.
As society as a whole, we do not like anything uncomfortable, particularly emotional and uncomfortable. And so at all costs, we do everything we can to avoid it, which is why doom scrolling like keeps us in the stress cycle. I don't mm-hmm. want to feel my feelings yeah. and maybe cry. So I'm going to refresh Instagram 1,000 times.
Yeah. Or not talk about the thing I really need to talk about, or mm-hmm. like not have that conversation with my partner, mm-hmm. right? And survival strategies aren't bad, right? They keep us safe. Mm-hmm. There's a reason we have them, but they also keep us stuck in the stress response.
And one day you'll just wake up with a hive condition. Maybe not.
Which we'll talk more about next week's episode when we go into how do we actually close the stress cycle now that we know that it's happening. Thanks for coming to Mindful as a Mother podcast. If you'd like more of us and Mindful as a Mother, you can find Paige at Instagram at Parenting with Paige and Lindsay at Linz_Adams_LCSW. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and in our Facebook group, Creating Community and Smashing Parental Stigma, Embracing Mindful Motherhood and Positive Parenting. Thanks so much and see you next time.